And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays podcast. I am Zach. He is Pat. And Pat, I feel like I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop in some ways with this team. But after this last week, I'm kind of starting to feel like, you know what? I think the shoe's never going to drop. I think this team is just like good, really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how good? Some would say that we're doing some kind of devil magic, unethical Satan deal that's going to cause some crazy regression later in the year. But right now, we're just not caring about that and just winning ball games. So, like, we've probably been in our coldest patch in about a month because we've lost, like, two out of our last six. We've had a week with multiple losses.
Crazy. I mean, just insane, honestly.
Yeah, which make like two losses in the same like kind of peer week. It's probably our coldest stretch in like a month. That's how good it's been. I mean, depending on how much stock you want to put in it, our playoff odds are what day is it today? 17th of April? 17th mm-hmm. of May. So on the 17th of April, we had 39% playoff odds. We now have 84%. We currently have if we go to the wild card standings, well, hold on. We got two games on the Yankees in the AL East.
Correct.
Right? But division on the Mariners. Leaders. Yeah. On the Mariners, who currently hold the sixth seat, we've got like a 10-game lead on those guys. So, like, we could play 500. We've done enough in these first 6 weeks of the season where we can kind of play 500 ball the rest of the season, and we'd probably still make the playoffs.
Yeah, I was trying to do the math. I gotta do the math again after yesterday's game. But I think with two more wins, we can literally play 500 the rest of the year and win 90 games, which recently has gotten you into the playoffs. So obviously we'd like to do way better than that and win the division, but we are approaching the period. And that's why, like, you know, it's easy to say, well, you know, you'd rather be, you know, hot late in the season or whatever, but wins are wins no matter when you get them in the year. And if you can stack wins early where there's like, you know, as much as we're stoked about how well the Rays are playing, the AL is definitely struggling right now. You can just observe that, like, and just see that that's a problem. Now, some of the struggles have been because of the Rays, because the Rays are killing teams. But overall, the AL is struggling. And, we're just capitalizing on that and getting out to this lead to where like you said, we go 6-2 versus our American League opponents over the last 2 weeks. We now get another nine games versus AL East opponents. These are incredible opportunities to extend that lead even further and put us in a situation where we can really start thinking about, okay, towards the end of the year with this kind of a lead, can we be pulling Shane back a little bit and not making him go six innings, not even maybe five, but pull him back, bring in some guys from AAA. Like, that's the kind of stuff we could be doing, but there's a long way to go until then. But it's hard not to feel excited and to be thinking about that kind of stuff with how well this team has played so far. And we're just loving every second of it. And we hope that you are loving every second of the season so far in Rays land. And if you are here joining us for the first time on the show, we appreciate you. We hope you enjoy. If you're returning from a previous visit, thanks for coming back. If you do us a huge favor in whatever platform you're enjoying us on, whether it's, you know, watching on Twitter, watching on YouTube, whatever else, drop us a follow or a subscribe. Helps us out a ton. It's free. Doesn't sign you up for anything or do anything other than let you know when we're going live and let you know when you can be a part of the conversation. Easiest way to do that is over on YouTube, dropping a comment. We'd love to hear from you guys. Let us know what you think about how the Rays are doing. And we're going to get directly into it because we got a lot to talk about today, starting with a great Blue Jays series. And that series started with an exciting game. Like, some of these games have been snoozers where, like, you know, the Rays are in control for most of the game. This was an exciting game. Fireworks early. Eight runs had been scored by the two teams over the first two innings. Against, you know, Drew Rasmussen and Gausman for the Blue Jays, like, guys who you are not expecting to get lit up, But the Rays got into it early, and so did the Blue Jays. It was a fireworks start to that first game of the Jays series.
Yeah. It was Tampa Bay Rays 8, Andrés Giménez 5. He put in a Herculean effort to try and keep the Blue Jays in that game. We were all over Kevin Gausman, which I loved, by the way, because he's their best pitcher. And for us to just – that was the one that I was like, oh, I'm a bit worried about this game. Gausman's had some success against us in the past, and he does kind of what the Rays – I think the Rays would love Kevin Gausman because he has a really good changeup. I mean, the Rays meta at the moment is just kill him with changeups. But we were all over him. We just hit him – we hit him for 5 runs in the first 2 innings. It was pretty incredible. And again, it was not like one mistake – blasted for a home run. It was just constant hits off of him as well, which was really impressive. Really enjoyed that game. I mean, Rasmussen got dinged for a few runs off Giménez, but that was only one mistake, right? That was like the one mistake that got him. And you could argue it's not the Giménez, this is maybe copium, right? But like, it was only 350 feet. Like, it's not like a moonshot. I think he managed to scrape it over the wall down the line, didn't he? So, you know, in other parks, that may not have been a home run. But regardless, we still came away with the dub, and that was a offense-led game, I think. That was the offense showing up, doing exactly what they're designed to do, which is just kill you with consistent, like, solid contact, just single you, occasional double you to death. I don't think we hit a home run in that game. So really good stuff there.
Yeah, the only home run in that game came off the bat of Jonathan Aranda, who seems to just sort of randomly pop one every, like, once a series or once every other series. He got one off of Gausman, I believe. I think that sort of ended his outing, or very nearly ended his outing, in the fifth inning when he came out after 4 2/3. It was 10 hits off of Gausman. That's a lot off of a pitcher of that caliber, a kind of front of the line ace type starter. 10 hits is a lot. So really happy to see the offense still finding ways to get it done. On the pitching side of things, like I mentioned, Rasmussen did go 6. He did give up 3 runs, which is sort of out of character for him, but at the same time, did still get 6 strikeouts. Really, like you said, only gave up the damage on the one home run. After him, Seymour came in and did his best, but he also gave up a home run to Giménez. So, like, I don't know what the deal is with that. But Seymour comes in, gives up a home run to Giménez, and then Biggie and Baker take care of it the rest of the way, getting us through the last 2 2/3 innings scoreless to get us the win to start the series out.
Loved it. Yeah, it's bad. You know, I think this was our first series against the Blue Jays, and I think people were feeling pretty hot about this series. I know Blue Jays fans on social media were feeling pretty hot about this series. It was one of those where the Blue Jays had come in underperforming expectations, I think. And the Rays were massively overperforming. And then this was seen as a kind of a test. It'd been like, can the Rays do it against their AL East opponents? We set the tone really well by just beating up probably not their best pitcher, but someone who's probably in the mix for that on any given day.
Yeah, and then going into the next game, you go up against Patrick Corbin, who is another guy that I would say is probably they would consider one of their better pitchers. And we end up getting 3 runs off of him, chase him in 4 1/3, 9 hits off of him as well, scored 5 runs through the 7th inning. And we're you know, it was a shutout to that point because McClanahan was excellent. 5 innings pitched, only 1 hit and 1 walk given up by him, 7 strikeouts. A really dominant start from him, and he transferred it over to Legumina, and it looked like it was going to be smooth sailing until the bottom of the 7th inning, where we gave up 5 runs, thanks to Legumina and Cole Sulcer, who did not record an out.
Yeah, Salsa had been great up until that game, and I guess he was due for a blow-up, because I'm so glad Salsa's doing well. I've never been his biggest fan. But I have been so happy to be proven wrong. I think he was due a blow up. And the main thing was he hit Legumina and Salsa both had bad outings, but we ended up surrendering the lead, making it 5-5, which is not great. And you were like, oh, here we go again. Another one of those bullpen blow up games. But you know what? We managed to keep them off in the 8th and 9th and did just enough to succeed in extra innings. getting those two runs when you're the away team is so huge. Getting more than one run as the away team in extra innings is huge. And I think we can count on our pitching to do enough after that, usually. We'll talk about when they haven't done that in a moment. But yeah, I think the mentality of this team was really on display in this one, that, you know, they could have cruised to a win. They ended up letting it drift, but they stuck to it and stayed in the game long enough to sneak the win.
Yeah, and as much as we've, you know, we've talked moments here and there throughout the season about frustrations with the bullpen, there does always seem to be a couple of guys who are finding a way. And it maybe isn't the same guys for like a long period of time. It definitely feels like there's been more volatility this season. But one guy who really hasn't been that volatile, maybe except for the very beginning of the season, was Kevin Kelly, who came in the middle of that tough inning and was able to get out of it with a strikeout and get through what was like, well, you know, I was concerned like, oh man, we are in some like serious trouble right here. We're going to, you know, we may even go beyond like giving up a tie game. It could go even beyond that. There was, you know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was on second and you had Okamoto coming up for the Blue Jays, which, you know, is a guy that has been doing really good things for the Blue Jays so far this season. And Kevin Kelly manages to get the strikeout there to get out of that inning. Which was, you know, was fantastic. And then, you know, Seymour bounces back from a tough outing the previous night, comes in there, goes an inning and a third, ends up getting the win, two strikeouts, getting us through. And then Clevinger comes in the 10th and, you know, does give up the Manfred runner, but who cares? Cause we got two in the top. Rays win.
Yeah, it was a tight one. My 2 points on that is I think a lot of people owe Kevin Kelly an apology. Because he's been outstanding. He's just been soft contact merchant, been getting big outs whenever we've needed him. Yeah, it's just been so good to see him return to form in a big way. This might be his best year so far as a Ray. And the other thing is, it was noted by Cash that this is and I think by Yandy as well, that this is apparently the tightest group that he's played with. These guys are really doing everything for each other. There's no egos. They're all kind of just like all on the same page and are really close. And I think that in itself, like clubhouse chemistry, and playing for each other and like lack of ego and kind of all being on the same page, all of those kind of things genuinely adds like two wins to your season.
Yeah, I agree. We've talked about this before because the Rays have made mention multiple times that they do value that clubhouse mentality, and they've made moves in the past that seemed like that was really the focus of what they were trying to do. And so it's good to hear that they've succeeded here and that they have put together a really strong clubhouse that is all pulling in the same direction. And you can tell by just watching the games, watching the way the guys interact with each other, how they're cheering for each other. You can tell that there is that tight-knitness of this group, and it also comes out in the results, because this team is, you know, I would say that this team is more than the sum of its parts right now, because if you look at just the individual like stat lines of a lot of these guys, like we do not have a 1.0 OPS guy right now on this team. We you know, Shane is the closest thing to like a true ace right now, because, you know, Rasmussen's had some struggles. You know, I would say Nick Martinez is also.
I was going to say, do you want to come on, Nick Martinez?
Those two, that's fair. We do kind of have two aces. The bullpen, Baker has struggled a little bit recently, but has been very good overall. So he's been great in the bullpen, and the rest of it's been sort of up and down. But this team as a unit is just finding ways to win game in and game out. And I love watching guys have a rough outing one day. I don't love watching that, but you see guys have a rough outing one day and are able to come back and have a great outing the next day. And I think that is a testament to the locker room. Nobody's getting super down on anybody. Nobody's killing anybody when they have a bad outing. It's the sense of, we're going to go out there and get them tomorrow. We're going to pick up the guys who are struggling, find a way to still win, and you're going to go out there and crush it tomorrow. And that's what the guys are doing. And it's just super fun to watch.
Yeah. It's a quiet confidence, I think.
Yeah.
Just like they're not braggadocious or showboaty. I think Junior is probably the closest to being like really expressive and animated, but it doesn't feel like an ego thing. Yeah. It just feels like they're like, we believe, like, they always seem to have really good at-bats when it counts. Even if the results don't come through, the minute they need an at-bat, they'll give you one.
Yeah.
So there's like a real focus there. I think it is a little bit of a chicken and egg sometimes where, like, does winning create a nice atmosphere? Or does a nice atmosphere create winning?
Sure.
And usually, like, you know, it's hard to be in a bad mood when you're winning a lot of games. It's hard to have a dysfunctional clubhouse and win a lot of games at the same time. Because when you're winning, why would you get mad? But let's keep that positive kind of reinforcement cycle of we don't know where it started. We don't know if it started with the winning or started with the clubhouse chemistry. But one's they're reinforcing each other now. So let's just keep that cycle spinning.
Yeah. And, you know, definitely needed to keep the cycle spinning after a rough finale to this series that started out so strong because we got five innings out of Griffin Jacks, who if you've tuned out and are tuning back in, yeah, Griffin Jacks is a starter now and he goes five innings, no earnings. He does give up eight base runners, four hits, yeah, four walks. But he didn't give up a run. He found a way to get out of it every time.
To use the cliche, he battled through five minutes.
He was battling
successfully though. Battling.
Successfully. And so he gets through his five. Biggie comes in behind him. And you kind of have a train of bullpen guys coming in behind Jax who are mostly getting it done. Baker, very unexpectedly, I might add, is the guy that finally walks four dudes. And I mean, like, that's just tough. That was a tough out. It was just very clear immediately that he did not have the strike zone. And you kind of thought he was going to find a way out of it because you're just thinking, we just need a ground ball. Just need a ground ball and we're out of this thing. And just could not find a way to do it. Ends up giving up a run, which at the time the Rays had taken the lead. They also did not do a whole lot offensively in this game.
Was really good.
Cease got to him in a big way. Nine strikeouts.
He's probably the Blue Jays' best actual pitcher.
He is. And Richie Palacios eventually got to him in the top of the seventh, scored a run off him, the only run scored off of him. And then, you know, we got through the bottom of the seventh, felt like maybe we were going to get out of this thing, didn't score on the top of the eighth. But then the bottom of the eighth, Baker, can't figure out a way to get out of it.
Very uncharacteristic. He's a guy that's known for being a strike thrower. He's not known to have those kind of like completely forget the zone. So it was really kind of like, what's going on here? And like people will go, why didn't Cash take him out sooner? And I go, no, I would have expected Baker to find the strike zone again because that's kind of what he's known for. Salsa did end up doing actually a pretty good job of coming in and making sure nothing else scored.
He did. Yes.
Because that could have got messy when you've walked that many guys. Salsa went an inning in the third. I think he felt like he was the only guy that didn't walk anybody, but that's not true. It was more just Baker and Brooks walked six guys. And then Jax walked four.
So 10 walks total.
10 walks. We didn't deserve to win that game, but we almost got away with it because we rallied in the top of the 10th. Went up 3-1. Again, you'd feel good about that. But unfortunately, and this was we had run out of arms by that point. Our good arms, we'd used them all. Like, we'd used Kelly, we'd used Clevenger, because Cash was very aggressive with his bullpen management of getting the top guys in.
Yeah.
Which in a 1-0 game, yeah, of course you do. So Biggie was used, Clevenger was used, Kelly was used, Baker was used, Salsa was used. Your only real option then was to go to Legumina or Seymour, who already pitched multiple innings the night before, or Aaron Brooks,
who, it, you know, you could be forgiven for missing it, that he came up on the ninth and hadn't pitched, I think, since like, was it 2024? Was the last time he
pitched major league games since 2024. Yeah.
And so here he is. And like, again, like, I don't blame Cash for managing the way that he did because you had a chance to get a sweep of a division rival in their building and you had a day off the next day. So I really have no, like, I don't have any problem. I think he did exactly what he should have done. And you were just sort of hoping that that Aaron Brooks could find a way. You gave him two runs in the top. You're just hoping maybe this guy can find a way to get some ground balls and get us out of this thing. And unfortunately, he got Dalton Varshowed for a grand slam to end the game. A brutal way for the game to end. But all in all, a good fight from the team. And you cannot be upset if you give up a grand slam to Dalton Varsho when you got Aaron Brooks in there. It's like, you know what? Tip of the cap is what it is.
The only thing that frustrated me was that he walked two guys before doing it. Like, if Varsho just beat him, I'd be like, okay. Oh, or if anyone just beat him for a home run, you kind of go, okay. But the fact that he was like, let me put on two runners before I do this. Yeah. And we talked about this last year. Can we add another tally to the Rays getting walk-off grand slams, please? Because this, we did the numbers on this last year. The Rays have been walk-off grand slammed by like twice the amount of any other team.
Yes.
I think this is, since the Rays' inception, I think this is our like 10th walk-off grand slam that we have surrendered. And again, do you remember how many we have hit in the franchise history?
I think it was like, didn't we say it was like three or something?
One.
Jeez.
We have given up like 10 walk-off grand slams in franchise history. We have hit one in 27 years. Do you remember who it was?
Who hit Freddie the walk-off grand slam?
The one walk-off grand slam in franchise history?
I don't remember.
It was Big Daniel Robertson. Daniel Robertson, yes. 2017.
Known power threat, Daniel Robertson.
Yeah. Anyone at home that got that one that didn't watch when we talked about this last year, well done. Brownie points for you. You have to drop a like on the video to tell me that you got it.
Yeah.
Them's the rules.
So Blue Jay series, again, you win. Anytime you win against a division rival in their building, you win the series, you're happy with it. Did feel like kind of a bummer that we didn't find a way to get the win, because we would have loved the sweep. But we'll take the series win every day. So is what it is. We did get an off. Felt like we really needed that off day, because the bullpen was struggling at that point. You know, we had played how many games in a row that have been like what? Like almost
13.
Yeah, like that's a lot of games in a row.
It was technically 12 because we got one rained off in Boston. It was meant to be 13, but it was, and we went 10-2.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. So we then get the off day, and then we begin the Citrus Series. And we begin the Citrus Series with a W, the way that it normally has gone, in a, you know, maybe one of the pitching matchups of all time. Junk versus Seymour and Schultens. I mean, like, what more could you ask for in a pitching matchup than those guys out there getting it done for 5 2/3 for Junk and 7 innings total for Seymour and Schultens? I mean, beautiful stuff.
Junk lived up to his name. Sorry, Jansen. But yeah, you were not good. You got absolutely shellacked out there. Everyone was getting hits off you. You gave up 10 hits, 7 earned runs in your 5 2/3, including 3 walks in there as well. Like, everyone was seeing the ball well off
you. 2 bombs. Yeah. Not great.
Yeah. You not let Cedric, well, Yandy homered pretty much immediately in that game. Yeah. And then even Mullins really saw the ball off you. You let Cedric Mullins homer off you in 2026. So it's going to be tough.
Mullins 4-for-4 in the day. 3 runs scored.
Mind you, 4-for-4, which is excellent with the home run. 2 of those hits were bunt singles. He's a really good bunter, by the way.
He is.
We've got a few of those. I think Simpson's a good bunter. I think Walls is a good bunter. I think Mullins is. And Williamson's been known to plant a couple down. Like, we are a good bunting team. So why not? I think we got to have a real conversation about Jesse Schultens. Did you expect him to be the mid reliever that got turned into a good starter this season? Because I didn't.
I did not, but like, I don't mean to alarm anyone, but Jesse Schultens has a 3.06 ERA.
Right.
He just finds a way to get it done. He's not blowing you away with crazy stuff, but he did strike out 4 guys. But you know what he didn't do? In his 5 innings, he didn't walk anybody. And like, it feels like such a simple thing that we talk about it all the time. And you, if you're a fan of the pod, you're probably tired of hearing about it. But like, it's just, it's one of those things that I believe, and I'm going to have to do some research on this maybe, but I really believe like not walking guys is like a huge contributor to winning baseball games. You just cannot give guys a free base. You just can't do it. It's like, I would be very surprised if I were to go and look at who's just not walking guys. I bet if you were to go look at that leaderboard, I might go do that while we're talking. I guarantee you that it's going to be teams that are really good and find ways to win are teams that are also not walking guys.
Yeah. Jesse Shelton's command has been excellent. I mean, his walk rate is well above average. He only walks 7.4% of guys, which is great. He really limits hard contact. And my favorite thing is if you go on like Baseball Savant and you look at his heat maps, they are they're like works of art. His pitch heat maps, like where he's putting his pitches, like the red is literally the edges and the corners of the zone. Like the red is the top kind of glove side for his four seamer. The glove side top corner of the zone is all red. The rest is blue. If you look at his sinker, the glove side bottom corner is all in the red. The rest is blue. If you look at his slider, it's kind of on the arm side. And then sweeper, all out of the zone. Split finger, just below the zone. He is putting his pitches exactly where all those pitches are destined to be for perfect placement. And he's doing that with regularity. When you do that, you don't need to be a stuff guy because with pitches constantly in the edges of the zone in the corners, more often than not, you're going to be either getting soft contact or swings and misses.
Yeah. And that's, again, this team can play some defense behind you. So if you can get that soft contact, if you can get those ground balls, you can turn those into outs. And that has been the playbook for Jesse Shelton's, and it's worked really, really well. By the way, I was talking a second ago about, you know, walks correlating to wins. The top like teams that give up the fewest walks are teams like Seattle, the Dodgers, Phillies, the Cubs, the Rays, and the Yankees are all within the top seven teams that give up the fewest amount of walks. And they're the teams that are leading divisions right now. Seattle's not leading their division, but like the Dodgers are there, the Cubs are there, the Rays are there, the Yankees are there, the Padres are not far behind there. And so like, I really do feel like that is just a strong place to start from an organizational philosophy standpoint. Like if we just don't walk guys, we are putting ourselves in a position to succeed. Now, obviously when you don't walk guys, you are opening yourself up to the home run, to the extra base hit by putting it in the zone. But that's where guys like Shelton's have done such a good job of limiting hard contact and being in the strike zone, but also not allowing guys to get hard contact. And that's obviously a tough line to walk, but that is, you know, that's what you got to do to be successful. And that's what Shelton's has done so well so far. So will it be interesting to see how, you know, if this is something he can sustain over the course of a season, or if it's one of those ones where as more film is developed on him over the course of the next couple of weeks, teams figure him out and are able to come at him. But maybe he's just a guy that's going to be able to go out there and give you four or five and give up one or two runs. And like, I'm not going to complain about that at all.
No. And also I want to give a shout out to you, Zach, because I think this was the first extended run of talking about Jesse Shelton's where you got his name right the whole time.
I've been trying really hard. I spent time over the last week. Every time I saw his name, I went out of my way to say Shelton's. Shelton's.
And it's paid off.
And I believe this guy is going to be a part of this team for the long haul. And he's been a huge part of the success so far this season, being able to come up and spell guys who were injured. So he deserves to get his name said correctly. Jesse Shelton, you deserve your name said correctly.
I don't want to sound foolish by getting ahead of myself and talk and use the P word too early, playoffs. But let's hypothetically, Could Jesse Shelton start a playoff game for the Tampa Bay Rays?
I don't think he will start a game, but could we have a playoff game where he pitches the most innings? Yes. I think it's more likely that we see him behind us, an opener of some kind, but could he then go in and go five? Yeah, I think he could.
Yeah.
I think it's on the board.
It's got like if we get this far, an ALDS game four written all over it.
Yeah. Because, the other, like the T word, we also shouldn't be saying yet, trade deadline. Getting ahead of ourselves on that route, we don't know what the Rays are going to do as far as making additions. We like to think that Boyle is going to be back eventually. We like to think that Mats should be back soon. But we may have to accept the fact that, you know, and obviously Pepio is gone. So he's just, yeah, we're not going to have him. So either way, Schultens is going to be a part of this team. And I think he's earned it. So the question is going to be, you know, I don't know that you can send him down once, you know, even as guys get healthy. I feel like he then becomes just your long man out of the pen. Like, he's earned a spot on the roster.
100%. Did you see that? I don't know what account tweeted it, but someone tweeted like a mock trade deadline for a bunch of teams. Goodness.
Just and awful.
The Logan Webb to the Rays.
I mean, we gave up like our entire, like our top four prospects or something insane for Logan Webb.
Yeah. It was literally like Theo Gillen and Tatum Gray and Carson Williams and Jacob Melton or something like that. And by the way, like, Logan Webb has not been very good this season. No. He's got a 5 ERA.
No. And again, like, could the Rays turn that around? Probably. But like, I am not one, unless something changes dramatically, if we can get, and you know, even if Schultens ends up closer to like a 4 ERA than a 3 by the end of the year, I'm still would rather do that than give up a bunch of trade capital for a, like, a mid starter. Like, if we're going to make a trade, I need it to be for somebody who's a needle mover. We have, like, we have that sort of mid rotation starter at home. Like, we have that. We don't need to go out and get that. And so, like, and obviously Logan Webb has some pedigree, but I mean, like, that trade was made by a Giants fan. I just have to believe that. Because, by the way, I went and saw the Hot Rods play last night, and Theo Gillen, that dude is for real. He is fast. He hits the ball hard. Looks great in the outfield. He had a triple that turned into an inside the park home run after a previous triple earlier in the game. I mean, he looks fantastic. So fun to watch. And then, you know, we've got some – Bowling Green's a fun group to watch. Adrian Santana's playing there right now. I think it's Fluelling is how you say his name, Fluelling, the catcher, who is like, hey, wait a minute. Is that the catcher of the future? He looks really good. It's getting interesting down in bowling. It's getting interesting in the minors in general for the Rays, but there's lots of fun stuff. If we got an off day in the middle of the week, the Triple A teams and like all the minor league teams are all playing. It seems like we've had a lot of Thursdays off recently. If you have a Thursday where it's no Rays, go watch some minor league baseball. There's some, the River Dogs are fun this year. The Hot Rods are fun this year. Durham's always got lots of talent there. Brody Hopkins. Go watch you some minor league Rays baseball. There's a lot of fun stuff going on down there.
Yeah. I think that Hot Rods team that you saw, there's a lot of fun there.
There's a lot of fun guys.
But you know, I think we got, I mean, the farm system's performing really well in general.
Yeah.
Like, because you talked about Gillen and you talked about Fluelling. Anderson Brito, who we also got in that in the Brandon Lau trade, he's doing quite well down there. Yeah. And then, you know, in Double A, you got Michael Ferrer, one of my favorites. He's doing really well with the Biscuits. You've also got Santiago Suarez as well, who hasn't been doing so well, but he's got a big arm. Jader Arenemo, he's there as well, but also struggling. But yeah, there's loads of good guys down there. I'm really
Brody
excited.
Hopkins.
Brody Hopkins, how can we forget? Austin Ovarn, that's the name. Austin Ovarn at the Biscuits. He was acquired at the in the Bars trade. The Bars trade is one to keep an eye on. Like, none of these guys have reached the majors yet, but it feels like everyone we acquired is just absolutely killing it in their minor leagues. Overn's one of my favorites at the moment. He's hitting .317 with 7 home runs through just 34 games. He also has 27 steals.
That'll play.
That's like both sides of the ball craziness. He does have a lot of strikeout going on at the moment, which you'd want a little bit less of.
Yeah.
But like, the raw tools on that guy are crazy.
Yeah. And that's not even talking about guys like Trey Morgan, who are, you know, I think his star has cooled a little bit.
Hasn't he been injured?
He's been had some injury stuff. And like, we also got to mention Xavier Isaac, who has found a way. Like, and this is the other thing that, again, and I don't want to get too much into trade talk. We still got to get through the rest of this Marlins series, but there is, if we wanted to make a move, if we wanted to do that, we have the prospects right now. Like, our farm looks great right now. If we wanted to make a move, we could.
100%. We could make a move, and we probably will, because we've got a lot of Rule 5 eligibles.
Yeah.
This offseason. And that's why I would expect us to be more aggressive than usual, I think, on the trade deadline. But yeah, Tayton Gray is a name that came out of nowhere and this year as well. I didn't really remember him until this year, and now he's been killing it. Homer Bush Jr. feels cool. I like him. He's started to find some power lately as well. And I also really like Ty Johnson as well. He was the Paredes trade. Kind of.
Yeah, you've been a big Ty Johnson appreciator.
Yeah, and he got called up to Durham. And he's not been... well, he's been doing very short starts in Durham, where he's been going like 3 or 4 innings, but he hasn't given up a run yet since being called up. He started the season at AA, but has come to Durham. So he could be on the team sooner rather than later, maybe next year.
Yeah.
So you got him two and guys. Could be on the rotation next season.
Yeah. So again, if you have a day where the Rays game, maybe the Rays have a day game, or if the Rays are off that day, go check out the minors. Because there's a lot of fun to be had. And checking out the minor leagues probably would have been more fun than watching the 10th inning of the last game of this, or not the last game, the second game of this Marlins series, last game today. This was a weird game because it was a very quiet game for most of it. Martinez was out there doing his thing. Sandy Alcantara was out there doing his thing. They both went scoreless 6 innings each. And well, I say that Alcantara did give up a run. It was unearned, but they both went on. They gave up. They didn't give up any earned runs.
The Marlins made 4 errors yesterday.
Brutal. And some of those errors were, I was like, ooh.
they were playing pretty rattled defense wise. Yeah. But it was very much a pitcher's duel. Martinez was great. Alcantara was great. But basically what happens, it goes to the 9th, 1-1. Yes. And Sanoha comes up with a really nice hit. Jacob Marcy as well was excellent. Mm-hmm. He's been both games, by the way. He's been like the certified Rays killer. He turned up to the shop and was like, what if I'm the greatest player to ever play the game of baseball? So shout out Jacob Marcy. Took the lead for the Marlins. We were looking like we were down, but then we managed to rally. Nick Fortes manages to tie it with a ground ball that, again, was ruled a single, but again, it probably could have been fielded a bit better by the Marlins. And we're like, hey, we'll take it. We go to extra innings. Okay. And we go, okay, we'll get Hunter Biggie out there. We'll try and keep things calm. Dear listener, he did not keep things calm.
Whatever the opposite of
messaged us. Zach messaged the Rays Discord chat for RBLR about 15 minutes after the start of the 10th inning. It was like, hey, what's going on in the game, guys? And we were like, you don't want to know, man.
I walked into the hot rod. We were playing in Greenville. So I walked into the Drive Stadium, and it was right as we were going into the 10th inning. Cause I just saw we had tied it. So I was like, okay, great. And I very much thought we'll figure it out. So I walk in, I get my hot dog, get my popcorn, get to my seat, stand for the national anthem, sit back down, watch the first inning. And then I pull up my phone. And I mean, carnage had occurred while I was going through all of that.
Yeah. Hunter Biggie was like, he gave up eight runs. Tough. He just was not, everyone was seeing the ball out of his hand. And Cash just said, listen, man, this inning's yours. And I don't care how badly you do. You're just getting through the inning.
Well, and again, it goes single, walk, single, sack fly, single, single, walk, double, single, ground out. So just like, it was like death by 1,000 cuts, literally, like a whole bunch of cuts. Like it wasn't like a huge home run or anything. Just could not get. And so like, maybe you could say that it was bad BABIP luck, but like some of those singles were hard singles, like well struck ground balls or nice line drives to the outfield. But again, nothing that was just crazy, but just could not find a way to get out of the inning. And yeah, And it was, you know, and give credit to the Rays. You know, we always talk about their resilience. They made a game of it in the bottom of the 10th. They came, they scored another three runs, had two guys on, and like, you know, made it interesting. Like, could have found a
they
way.
They really tried. Yeah.
They really they did. Really I give tried. Them credit. I give them credit.
Junior very almost hit a home run. He hit it literally off the very top of the wall. Yeah, they tried, and it was frustrating. It was like, damn, we scored three runs in extras, and we're still five runs off.
Five runs down. Yeah.
Like, imagine if like Biggie just didn't have a even if Biggie had a rough outing and but just wasn't like an all time disaster, we probably could have had more of a game of that. We're gonna play the rubber match in about 10 minutes from when we're talking right this second, because we're on the early Peacock's early kickoff or whatever it's called.
They've
got a special name for it where they do a Sunday really early game. Matt Vasgersian, BA, and I think one of the Marlins analysts are on the call, which is my way that you should do a national broadcast, by the way, is you should have a neutral play-by-play from the network, and then you should have each team's color guy. You have one team's play-by-play, another team's color guy, so that you've got the balance. That's how national teams should do it, because I'm not a fan of most national broadcasts. I'm not going to lie to you.
Apple TV. I feel like it's more fun that way, because you do get like you get more than just your surface level. Hey, you ever heard of Junior Caminero? Like, you get like some of that stuff for these. And it's just is like I'm just muting it and turning on. I'll just listen to Andy.
Rays
like,
flicks.
I'm done with this. Like, I'll listen to the radio at this point.
Radio.
Like,
I'll never forget Rays flicks, man. An all time playoff discussion. This was a playoff game, and they were like, the Rays have so many relievers, you can pick and choose what you want. It's like Rays flicks. I was like, oh man. But hey, they tried. Okay, at least it wasn't the wine thing that MLB Network do every year. Do you know the thing I'm talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, right. Okay. For anyone that doesn't know, MLB Network every year put out a bit where they're like, hey, the Rays, it's whenever the Rays are off to like a good 2-week stretch. It doesn't matter if we're good. Doesn't matter if we're bad. If the Rays have like two good weeks in a row, MLB Network will put out the same skit every year. And finally, Mark DeRosa acknowledged it this year. He went, by the way, we do this every year. And I was like, yes. It's called The Grapes of Wrath. And they go, here's Eric Neander. Here's the sommelier. And it's him like getting a load of grapes. And then they're like, it's a cash bar only. They do that joke every year. And then they then try and make the most forced like Rays player into wine puns that they can possibly do. It's pretty bad. But this year they did a second one. They did a second one where the Rays were digging up fossils. I can't remember much about it, but they were digging up fossils, but they were finding gems, I think is the, which feels like a nicer way of doing it. The Rays find these diamonds in the rough. Yeah, I can see that. Analysis, like I can see that kind of forced narrative, but the grapes of wrath, come on, man. I'm so over that. We'll do a little bit of roster stuff, and then I want to talk about X wins and losses, and then we'll let everyone enjoy the Rays game.
We should, but before we do both of those things, we need to really quickly talk about who was really good this last week in our weekly segment, Bat and Arm of the Week. Pat, can you get us started with the Arm of the Week?
Yes, I can. It was really tough, actually. We had to have a bit of a discussion about our Arm of the Week. It was really close between two. We have decided to go with one, Shane McClanahan, this week. Shane McClanahan, welcome back. Is this his first Arm of the Week? I think it's his second.
He got Arm of the Week last week, I believe.
Yeah, back to back. He is really looking like his old self. He's had like 5 or 6 really good starts in a row. His changeup remains outstanding. He went 5 innings, struck out a whole bunch of guys, no earned runs allowed, led the pitching staff in FWAR this week, was just completely dominant. And again, with McClanahan, you don't really want to put too much focus on the length of his outings because he's definitely being managed very carefully, but he has looked very much like his old self. He might be in his third year in a row of being healthy, making the All-Star team. which is even more impressive when you spend two and a bit years on the shelf to come back and immediately resume form like that. It's so, so impressive. And it just warms my heart.
Yeah. And I, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about how much like this guy in particular means to this team. They've put a lot, he's one of the longest tenured, maybe the longest tenured Ray other than, I think Yandy might be slightly longer tenured, but he's one of the longest tenured Rays in the organization at this point. They got a lot of equity put into this guy. And it means so much to see him being able to come back out there and giving the kind of outings that he's been able to give off the injury, being able to consistently now get out there for 5 to 6 innings means a whole bunch. And at this point, like, you know, we're a little bit of a ways into the season now. And I mean, obviously he's, you know, it's early to say Cy Young, but he's going to be in the conversation if he keeps pitching like this. You know, obviously you've got guys like Cam Schlittler, his teammate, Nick Martinez, who is right behind him, who is also doing having a great start to the year as well, but he's in the conversation. He's sitting now, you know, now that he's gotten almost 40 innings into the season, sitting at a 2.27 ERA, 1.3 F4 on the season so far. I mean, you just love to see it. He's still walking guys maybe a little bit more than he'd like to, but in a couple of the last recent starts, he's really started to move back in the direction we want to see on that. The strikeouts are where they always have been for him. And so, I mean, I don't know what else to say other than it's just great to have him back. Also nice to see Nick Martinez continuing to do great. He was our runner-up. He has been the best starter on the Rays so far this season. It's not even close. And we're talking about Shane maybe being in the – like, Nick Martinez is like 1A or 1B in the Cy Young conversation right now. He's not striking out guys as much as some of the other guys that are in this conversation. But, I mean, just pure run prevention. Do you know he's given up the fewest runs, tied for the fewest runs given up in baseball so far this year?
Wow, that is really impressive. Yeah, he's right in – those two are right in the mix of the all-star conversation, I think. So that's going to be really interesting. Really interesting to see how that plays out. But shout out to both those guys. Zach, who is our bat of the week?
Our bat of the week is a guy that I think, like, going into this season, we would have hoped would have won one of these. But I think as we watched the season unfold, there were times where we were like, this guy is never going to win an arm of the week or a bat of the week, which, you know, is something we think about while we're watching games, who may or may not win bat of the week. And I wasn't sure this guy was ever going to do it. But this week, I got to give him credit. Cedric Mullins came out there and got the job done. He goes a 181 WRC plus on the week, 0.3 F4 over the course of the week. He has a 455 on base percentage, 3 stolen bases, 3 RBIs, a home run. I mean, I gotta give him the credit. You know, we lament the unfortunate performances of some of these guys when they're not performing the way we'd like to see them perform. And we gotta give them props when they go out there and do the thing. And he went out there and did the thing this last week. It was sorely needed. We had some guys like Junior and Yandy have pretty down weeks by their standards. And, you know, Cedric came in and was one of the guys turning in the other direction. A 4-hit day for him. You just got to give him a lot of credit. Cedric Mullins, bat of the week.
Yeah. I said last week that Cedric Mullins was going to be fine. And lo and behold, here we are. And the reason I say this is because everything that he was doing was tracking with the rest of his career in terms of swing decisions, in terms of chase rates. Yeah. Like, he was having the exact same process that he's always had. And he's been a 2-time All-Star, by the way. So the fact that apparently him doing the same thing and just being bad, like, there's been a few things where you're like, oh, he struck out where he probably could have done a bit better. But like, the processes remain the same, and I knew it was due for a bit of positive regression, and it's coming. And whether or not that will continue, who's to say? But I think we're still due a bit more positive regression on Mullins before everything's said and done. But the main thing is, throughout all of this, he has played pretty much consistently really good defense in center field. I think underrated defense in center field. People have been – when he missed, he's had the occasional miss – but I don't think he's ever missed a sitter. Yeah. There's a few where you're like, ooh, that's a 50-50 catch. You'd want him to make it, and he hasn't made it. But most of the time, he's making a lot of good catches and some tough ones that I think people are underrating how tough some of the plays that he's been making are.
Yeah, so give him a ton of credit. Found a way to get the job done on the offensive side this last week, and love to see it. Let's talk really quickly about the transaction wire over this last week, because there have been a couple of notable things that have happened. Number one, Trevor Martin has found his way back to the team. He's recovered from injury, so he is now available as an option. And he was the send up when Aaron Brooks was sent down. So nice to see that he's figured out how to, you know, get healthy and get back on the team. So good for him. And then the other one that's really notable was yesterday, or I guess it technically happened today, retro to yesterday, Jake Fraley on the 10-day injury list with a hernia. No real timeline on that. Hopefully not a super long time, because Fraley's been good for us, and we'd hate to see him gone for a long time. But the move in correspondence with that is definitely an interesting one worth discussing, and that is they brought back up Carson Williams.
Yeah, really interesting. He's been doing well in AAA, making some good adjustments, cut down his strikeout rate, his swing and miss rate. Also been chasing less. He's been using the opposite field more. He looks like he's matured his approach a little bit and refined it to be a little bit more like it's going to be able to play against major league velocity a little bit more. He's being a bit less greedy, I think, is the best way to put it with his swing. So hopefully that'll help him be a solid contributor this time around. Because the door, we want him to be able to stick on this roster. We like the team want there to be a spot for him to stick around when he comes up. Like, I think we all don't want Taylor Walls to be the primary shortstop on this team and there to be another option. So the door is open for Williams to do that. So let's see if he can make use of that. In terms of Fraley and the hernia, if it's a back thing, like they can be super tricky to figure out, like how, like backs are not an exact science. Like muscles, you can kind of predict a bit easier of like how long they need a rest, how long they take to recover, because it's a grade one or a grade two spring. Backs are so, like, sometimes a back can look fine and then still feel bad. So it really depends on the individual, and it depends on so many like little factors. So backs are such a tough one to predict. It's a shame. And it's interesting that we've traded an outfielder for an infielder on the roster. But that implies that I think you mentioned pre-show that would be Palacios might get the occasional corner outfield start.
Yeah, I think Palacios and Valade benefit from that, just getting a couple more outfield looks than maybe they weren't getting previously, because Fraley was playing a lot of games. Obviously, being the long side of the platoon helps him with that. But I think that we'll see more of Palacios in the outfield getting into the lineup. I mean, he's already getting into the lineup against righties a lot of the time as well, but now he's just going to end up taking Fraley's spot in that scenario. Carson's not starting.
More and more comfortable.
Yeah, he is. And Carson's not starting today, but I imagine we are going to see him a decent amount, because it doesn't really make sense to bring him up for him to ride the pine. So I would expect to see him get some starts out there. I understand not, because this was kind of a quick move, not starting him today. Like, I'm okay with that, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see him starting tomorrow. So we'll see where that ends up leading us. The other notable thing that happened from not really a transaction standpoint, but from a injury standpoint, was Gavin Lux. He managed to hurt himself some other way. He was getting really close to the end of his rehab. We thought he was going to join the team in Toronto originally.
Yeah.
And he is injured again. No timetable at this point.
Yeah.
And
a shoulder issue.
Yeah. And I think we are starting to look at a scenario where I don't know that it is a guarantee that we see Gavin Lux in a Rays uniform in the Trop this season.
Yeah. It really depends on shoulders. I mean, he's probably going to be out without playing for at least a couple weeks before he starts thinking about rehab again. Tough look. I mean, I wouldn't wish it upon anybody to be like constantly just picking up one battle after another injury wise.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but luckily I think it's not going to be of too great detraction to the team, because like we've not had him all season and we're winning a lot of games. It's tough for him, and it'd be nice to have that option, but I think we've kind of got used to not having him, and it's not a position where we're like, oh, he's going to move the needle at second base. I don't think Williamson or Palacios.
Yeah, and so The other thing that we were sort of talking about a little bit before the episode was this team's kind of found their rhythm as this group. And so obviously if injuries come, you know, you got to make adjustments, but if nobody's injured, I'm not sure at this point who you're sending. Like, I mean, we would think it probably would be Palacios getting sent down if Lux was healthy and they brought him up. But at this point, this group has kind of found their mojo as a group. And so I'm, you know, I would be loath to, especially if you're now you're talking about getting into the, you know, the middle of the season. Like, you're probably talking about around All-Star break type situation where you'd be talking about bringing them up and breaking up a group that's been together at that point. And obviously last year with Ha-Seong Kim, we thought, well, we want to bring him in because frankly the team wasn't performing very well, so you want to make that change. But with this team, it's like, man, like, I don't know, do we want to make that change? Do we want to say, let's just run it as is? Especially if it's not a huge change in production. Because we don't know whether or not Gavin Lux would be a huge change in production. We hope with the pedigree that he'd find a way to do that. But, you know, the evidence has not really been there over the past 2 years at the majors that he's significantly better than Williamson or Palacios. So, I don't know. I don't know. It's a tough one. I hope he recovers and he's able to play soon. I'm just curious to see how the Rays are going to handle it if he does eventually get healthy, you know, middle of June or beginning of July.
Yeah, one to watch, but it is a shame. But again, I agree with you that I don't think it's going to be a huge detractor to the team. I was going to do a whole thing on X-Win Pythagorean record, but I don't want to detract from the Rays game that has started, by the way. Rasmussen hit a guy with a pitch, but he's otherwise retired the other three guys, so we're going to go to the bottom of the first. The only thing I'll say before we get out of here is obviously they've got this early game against the Marlins, hopefully can take the series. We've not lost a series since we played the Reds back in the 20th to the 22nd of April. Crazy. So like a month ago. So hopefully we don't go back, we keep that streak going. But this is a big week because actually, and I guess 9 games, because we're going Orioles, Yankees, Orioles. Orioles at home, then Yankees and Orioles on the road. Orioles have been struggling a bit this year. Their prospects, that like that, you know, the Jackson Holliday, Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, they've all kind of hit a decline at the same time. So their lineup is doing decently, but not as well as you'd want them to. And what's worse is their pitching. It's the one thing that we were all like, this is what's going to make or break the Orioles, is really struggling. We are expected to face Shane Baz in the third game of that series. So that'll be an interesting watch. Yeah. Shultons versus Baz. So keep an eye on that. And then I love how the Yankees series pitching has lined up. It's expected to be Nick Martinez against Elmer Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. Rasmussen versus Ryan Weathers, and then McClanahan versus Will Warren. We're going to avoid Schlittler, and probably face the three weakest Yankee starters.
And Fried is hurt right now, so he wouldn't even have been an option. So we're missing Schlittler, basically. Yeah, and I mean, you know, Orioles have given up the second most runs in all of baseball, so you'd hope we can score some runs there, and hopefully we can get to this Yankees pitching staff and do kind of what I've been saying is this is a week where we could continue to bury the American League. If we find a way to win that Orioles series and win or sweep the Yankees, now all of a sudden we are, you know, a series or so up on everybody else in the American
League. A series win against the Yankees at the stadium would be such a statement.
Yes.
And it would just give us that little bit of wiggle room in what's proving to be quite an entertaining AL East division race at the moment. Yeah. So big week ahead. Next we talk will be we'll probably just either be just about to play the final game in that Yankees series or just after, which is very exciting. And we'll be able to break it all down then.
Yes, and we will be excited to do so. And we hope that you join us. If you enjoyed the show today, drop us a follow or a subscribe. We'll let you know when we go live again, let you know when you can be a part of the conversation. And we do hope you will join us next week. It's going to be a very fun week of Rays baseball. I've got a good feeling about this week. I'm excited to see us have the opportunity to put some distance between us and the Yankees. It's always fun to go into Yankee Stadium when we're playing well, when we're a little hot. So I'm just super stoked, and we hope that you will join us hopefully to celebrate a series win already clinched next Sunday, or maybe with an opportunity to sweep. We will see. But no matter what, either way, it's going to be Rays up.
Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.